Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, and I am your host. The mission in my work is to empower people to manifest their values of compassion and wellness in their everyday lives. I'm the author of The Joy of Vegan Baking, The Vegan Table, Color Me Vegan, Vegan's Daily Companion, and On Being Vegan. I'm the creator and host of the 30-Day Vegan Challenge, which gives you everything you need to make the transition healthfully, joyfully, and deliciously. You can check out 30dayveganchallenge.com, and you can check out my website for lots of information and resources, and go to ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com. Thank you to all who are supporting this podcast as monthly members and annual members and people who are making straight donations as well. We are grateful for every single donation that comes in, and there are many options for anyone who finds it in their heart to support this work. Thank you, first and foremost, to our platinum members, U.S. Army Captain Janie Mena, Deborah McDowell, members of the Norwegian Vegan Society, Tim Anderson, David Cabrera, and Alexander Gray in New York City. Alexander Gray Associates, you can check out alexandergray.com. Peter and Eric of Peace Food Cafe in New York City, that's peacefoodcafe.com, and Kavitha. You're all amazing, and I'm so grateful for your support. We've lost some platinum members, so please consider becoming a platinum member. You can certainly pool together your resources if you're part of an organization or however you'd like to do it. But we have a couple renewing gold members, Amy Critchman. Amy, thank you, and Sylvie Raquel or Rockel. And new gold members, Patty Bilharts, Sally Burns, Kathy Pickett, and Carrie Parker. Carrie Parker, I think I'm still jet lagged. I hope I'm pronouncing your names correctly. I'm so sorry if I'm not. Carrie wrote a beautiful email. Briefly, she wrote, Colleen, I'm thrilled to have found you. I came across your website one evening while I was looking for help on ways to start the vegan path. I knew for years that what I ate and how my food is processed and the poor animals affects the way I live. After 36 years of being an excusitarian, I decided it was time to change. I needed guidance and someone to help me understand how easy this is. That someone was you. After the first week, I learned so much and can't believe how completely silly I have been for so many years. I've listened to your podcast and feel that without your dedication, guidance, and energy, I would not be able to get this right. I truly feel that everyone needs to listen to you. You're truly a part of my life in the most wonderful way. I can't thank you enough for how you have personally affected me. I'm a member because I want you to never stop what you're doing. Being a new 2014 vegan was the best decision I've ever made. A bit late, like 36 years, but hey, I'm here and I have you. So thank you. I feel amazing. Thank you, Carrie. I think that's the first time I actually saw that email. My wonderful assistant who helps with the memberships put this on the document we share so I can read these letters. And I don't think I saw this letter before this moment. So I'm so touched. Thank you so much. That's just incredible. I'm so grateful you found me, and I'm so grateful to be here. And because of you, I'm able to be here doing this work. So thank you and everyone. Support this podcast by going to ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com and making a difference, making a donation. So, hi everybody. I am here. I am back. I was just out of town and I'm grateful to be home. I very much appreciate all of your thoughts about my mom. She's in physical therapy. My mom had heart surgery and she's doing great. And she's anxious to regain her strength so she can come visit. And I really appreciate all your positive healing thoughts that you sent to her and to me. And I'm really grateful for it. She's doing fantastically well. I'm also really thrilled by the response I've gotten from so many of you about my response to Laura's email in the previous episode, not the love letter episode, but the previous episode about being an overweight vegan. I know there are a lot of discussions going on about this right now, about fat shaming, as it's been called in particular, and I'm really glad to have contributed to this conversation, and I'm so thrilled that my response was helpful to so many of you, and I've really gotten countless responses. It might be an episode I've gotten the most responses to in terms of email and Facebook posts. The only other one I think was the masturbation episode I did about the paleo diet, mostly from paleo people who don't like what I had to say. So in terms of positive responses, this is the most number of responses I've received because of something I said on a podcast. So I am thrilled. And yeah, thank you. It has been a pretty busy couple weeks. I have been to Texas and Florida and back, and I had a good trip. It's always a little stressful to travel, but that's the way it is. I was asked to speak at the New Year, New You conference that's being put on by Healthy Marshall. I think that's what it's called, Healthy Marshall. Marshall, Texas, some wonderful people have been putting on this conference for the last few years, and I was asked to come be part of it. The mayor of this little town in East Texas called Marshall, Texas, has gone vegan, and so has his wife, and they just really want to spread the word to everybody who can and will listen. And so they had a number of speakers come for a three-day long conference, and I was one of them, and I'm so glad to have been part of it. And so, of course, I always love the opportunities to talk to people, not only the people who come to the conferences that I speak at or the talks that I speak at, but also people just on the periphery. So when I travel on the plane and, you know, meet strangers who don't know what I do and who aren't coming to see me speak, I love those interactions. Nothing thrilling on the way there. I flew from, it was kind of a lot of flights, but basically, I think from San Francisco to Houston, I sat next to a couple who we didn't really talk the whole time. And then at the very end, we started talking and they were really lovely. They asked why I was traveling and I told them why I was there. And they said that the husband has been eating mostly vegan because he has some health issues, but he's eating very restrictive. He's eating no nightshades and all of that. And so they were asking me some questions, and I do have nightshades, recipes for nightshades in my book. So we were talking about that, but they were really open and they were really excited. And at one point she said, the one thing I'm really struggling with is, do you have any recommendations for good cookbooks? And I said, yes, in fact, I do. I can recommend some good cookbooks. So she was really happy and she was lovely to talk to. And she took my card, and I always carry postcards of 30 Day Vegan Challenge and postcards of my books. And so it's great to be able to just hand those to people when they ask. So that was lovely. And then I had a 2-hour layover in Houston and I was looking for restaurants, and I don't think I've flown into Houston before or perhaps I've never stayed there. So I went from Terminal C to Terminal E, and of course I'm just walking around and ignoring all of the barbecue places. And I saw one restaurant that looked nice. It was a sit-down restaurant. It had a wine list. And so I went up to the hostess because I had looked at the menu, and the menu was just full of inedible items, i.e., animal products. And I said to the hostess, who was young and sweet, I said, hi, I said, would I be able to just get a salad? I see you have salads, but could I get a salad with no animal products? And she said, oh, are you vegetarian? And I said, yes. And she said, well, we could do the Cobb salad with eggs. And she goes, oh, can you eat eggs? And I said, well, I can, but I don't want to eat eggs. And she said, oh, well, then just know, we'll totally make something for you. Just go sit down and the waiter will bring over whatever you want. So I sat down and I said, could you just bring me a fabulous salad? And, you know, I had to explain just a couple things. And he said it was no problem. He said, do you want some extra avocado? Do you want some extra carrots? You know, he asked a couple questions that made me think he didn't know what some vegetables were. But he was great and it was fabulous. And I had this really beautiful salad I took a picture of. Maybe I'll put it on the page on my website so you can see it. It was beautiful and I had a great salad. So I was very happy. The event itself was lovely. I was thrilled to be able to spend time with some good friends and colleagues of mine, Brenda Davis in particular and Michelle from Herbivore, and we just had a really good time. And then I decided to go to Tampa to see my father, who is 82 now. And I spent a couple days there with him and my niece and nephews. And I was taking a walk with one of my nephews. I think some of you know this story. We were just walking around the neighborhood and we were coming upon a house. So we were on the sidewalk and I saw two young girls, maybe about 10, 11 years old. And as I was walking with Sam, I was asking if he knew this person and that person. Do you know who that person is? And so we were approaching the girls and I said, do you know who those girls are? And he said, no, they're in middle school. I don't know them. And they were looking at something toward the houses, toward the yards. And as we got closer, I said, what are you looking at? And they pointed and said, oh, this animal, raccoon, maybe he's so funny. And he's just been acting weird. And at that moment, the woman whose house he was at, so the raccoon was right at this gate by her backyard. And she opened a window and said, he's been here all day. And I don't know what's wrong with him, but I don't want to touch him, or he's awful, something. And I, you know, my head was kind of immediately going into solution mode. And behind me were these two girls who were giggling. And I'm not exaggerating, they were giggling. and laughing and taking pictures. And then their mother must have pulled up in the car. One of their mothers pulled up in the car behind me or a truck and said, girls, I don't want you here. He might be rabid. Go away. Don't go here. And then we want to take a picture. We want to take a picture of the raccoon who was acting so strangely. He was so disoriented and so clearly in distress. And I was incredibly disconcerted by the fact that this woman said he's been there all day and these children are taking pictures and laughing. And granted, when a wild animal, you know, when raccoons or any animal has what we think was distemper, we're pretty sure it was distemper, they, you know, they're affected neurologically and they look drunk. And so I can understand for a moment if someone looks at that and thinks they're just kind of playing and being playful and funny, and these were children, and perhaps they've never seen this and no one's ever told them. So giving them the benefit of the doubt that they didn't really know the seriousness of the situation, I did not engage with them at all because I was really just trying to solve for helping the raccoon. And I just wanted to ignore them. And then the woman came out from the house and said, we called animal control this morning and they never came. I guess they had something better to do. So as she's telling me that, I start searching on my phone for wildlife rescue and I find a place immediately. I call him right away. I tell him what I'm looking at. He tells me to bring the raccoon in. He said, if you can bring the raccoon in, if you can get him in a box, then bring the raccoon in. And so I said, well, how far away are you? And he said, about 45 minutes from where you are. So I just got into action and I said to the woman, and at this point, her husband pulled up because I guess she must have called him or maybe he came home from work early because it was only about 4 o'clock. And he said, well, you know, so we're just starting to talk now and I'm looking at the raccoon and they're all just like keeping their distance, which you should do when there's wildlife. We shouldn't be engaging with healthy wildlife, certainly. And if they're sick, I understand rabies is a very serious disease. You do not want to contract rabies, but I knew that this animal was in so much distress and I had to go with my instincts. And so I asked them if they had any gloves and a box and a towel. And I just decided I was going to take this raccoon. And so I went around the back so I could come from the other side of him so I didn't startle him. And when I got there, he was just, his eyes were closed and he was so completely out of it. And it was just really sad and touching. And I had the gloves on and I touched him to just kind of rouse him. And he just looked up at my face with his little eyes, and I swear his face was just saying, thank you, just get me out of here, you know, like just thank you. And he could not, he wasn't in any condition to fight or resist. So he just let me put him in the box and, you know, I had the towel there. I didn't even close the lid, frankly. He was just so lethargic and out of it that I didn't need to do that. He wasn't trying to escape. And at this point, they were watching me from the other side of the gate and could see what was happening. And as I was walking away, the husband said, do you work with animals? And I just said, yes. And I think it was good for them to see how someone responded to the situation. And there are lessons in terms of when to respond. You know, like I said, I get that. And nobody else was going to help. Animal control didn't come. This rescue place wasn't going to drive 45 minutes and then drive him back again. So I made the best decision I could, and I stand by it. I did it safely, and I did it with gloves. And he was just not in a condition to survive, and he was in incredible amounts of pain, I'm sure. So I drove the 45 minutes to this rescue place outside of St. Petersburg and handed him the box with the raccoon, and he just looked down, and the poor little raccoon was just looked up, and he said it's most likely distemper, and the vet would confirm. And so I called the next morning, and he had been put to sleep, and it was distemper. And I was just really sad, and I was also really grateful that I was least able to intervene in terms of ending this animal's life with some dignity, because the fact that he was there all day, and who knows even how much longer than that, is just heartbreaking to me. That's what's so heartbreaking to me, is that he just kind of writhed there in pain until someone came and helped. It was a holiday that day too, so that's why everybody was home in the afternoon. Perhaps that's why animal control didn't come, but it's certainly a lesson, folks. I've talked about this when I've talked about intervening, whether it's domestic animals or wildlife, and having the number, having, you know, wherever you travel or wherever you live, having the phone numbers in your phone of wildlife rescue places or certainly animal control. You know, they're not always there in the best interest of the animals, but that's the best some cities have. And really knowing who to call when something like this happens, having something in your car, having gloves, having a towel. It's really helpful when the time comes so that you can actually help. And I was able to. So I was glad that the place was there. And the next morning, I went back with my niece and I had written down a couple wildlife places, the phone numbers for this woman, you know, whose house it was. And, you know, one thing I didn't say was that when she was coming outside and the other woman was there, she was like, oh, I can't believe it's your house. Oh, of course he'd happen to die in front of your house. And she's like, I know, I hate animals. And like, there was that kind of talk back and forth, which was so insensitive. And again, I didn't respond to it because I just wanted to help this raccoon. And I didn't have to say anything because by virtue of me just intervening, I think spoke volumes. So the next day when I went to this woman, you know, I wasn't planning on berating her for not liking animals. It wasn't what I was there for. I was there to give her information. And it was funny because she recognized me only because I look like my sister and who lives in the neighborhood. And she thought, are you Lori's sister? So she knew that I was familiar, you know, I was the family member of someone who lived around there. So she thanked me for giving her the information. And I said, yeah, if animal control doesn't come or if you can't get a hold of them, here are these wildlife places. I said, you should definitely also make sure people know that there might be other raccoons with distemper, but it doesn't jump the species barrier. Between dogs and raccoons and wildlife, it does, but not between humans. But I said, you know, we call the wildlife place if you see others. And she said, actually, we have seen some other raccoons during the day. She pointed to a neighbor down the street. So I said, well, here are some numbers to call. So, and I said, you know, I don't know who those girls were. I said, but it was a little disconcerting seeing them laugh and take pictures. And she indicated that that was typical of these girls. So I said, well, maybe you can share this information with them too, because there are probably other ways to react rather than laughing and taking pictures of an animal in distress. So it was, you know, ultimately came full circle, was able to give her some more information that will perhaps help in the future. And in the end, the raccoon is no longer suffering. So that was a bit of an adventure I didn't expect to have while I was there. And my niece and my nephew got to see someone intervene. And I think that's always great to be able to model compassionate behavior. And so then I made my way home and we had delays because of weather from coming from other places. And it was really funny because on the way home, I was sitting next to a gentleman and he and I started talking kind of more toward the end of the middle of the flight. And we were in first class. I had been, luckily I had some miles I was able to use to upgrade to first class. So the meals were, we had meals. They didn't have any special meals for me because I was bumped onto a different flight. So my original meal probably got lost somewhere. And so I just had some salad, which was fine. I had already had some food in the airport. And he had ordered some chicken. Gross. And anyways, we started talking and it turned out he lives in my neighborhood. So the guy I was sitting next to on the plane literally is a neighbor. I didn't know him, but he lives in my neighborhood. And I knew exactly which house he lived in because I knew the garden that he had outside of his house. Because it's an edible garden and I walk around a lot my neighborhood and I knew exactly which house it was. So we had this wonderful conversation. His father is vegan and he had been vegan for just a couple months just to check it out. And he was very motivated and moved and inspired to return to it. So of course we exchanged information. I gave him my information and he was apologetic about the chicken he had ordered. He said, I know you wouldn't know it from what I just ordered, but we actually do eat mostly vegetarian at home, as most people say. And he was really motivated and it was a really great conversation. So there are always opportunities to talk and communicate and share and model compassionate behavior, whether you're on a plane, whether you're in a store, whether you're walking in a neighborhood. And there you go. So that was my trip outside of what I was there for. Because every moment is an opportunity for this. You don't have to just do this for a living and travel somewhere to speak and that's your work. Our work is every person we talk to. Our audience is everyone who's sitting next to us or every interaction we have with a server or a clerk or a plumber, whatever it is. And so I'm grateful to be able to have all these different opportunities. And that's pretty good considering I really don't leave my house a lot. It's only when I fly on a plane that I really interact with a lot of people because otherwise I'm here writing and recording. So that's that. So I'm going to take just a minute and we're going to go right into the What Would Colleen Do segment. So I'm going to just shake out my little cobwebs and we'll come back in just a second. So, hi everybody. Welcome back. One thing I didn't say when I was talking about the raccoon, I had put this out on Facebook. A tweetable that I would recommend for today is something that I wrote on Twitter, and I'd love to see if you respond to this. But I wrote, one life matters, especially to the one whose life it is. So for those of us who don't think that helping one animal makes a difference, obviously it does to that animal, or anybody for that matter. So one life matters, especially to the one whose life it is, would be the tweetable for today. I think we're going to have more than one tweetable for the day, but that's one that you might want to put out there if that resonates with you. But we are in the What Would Colleen Do segment, and this segment is our time together for me to answer your questions directly. And I'm thrilled and overwhelmed by the number of questions I've received from all of you. In fact, I can see us taking more and more time on the podcast to address your issues directly. And so I encourage you to call, email, or tweet your questions. You can tweet anytime using the hashtag WWCPGD or email me at WWCPGD@compassionatecooks.com, putting WWCPGD in the subject line. And as you know, I'm taking calls once a week. So visit ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com and click on Ask Colleen in the menu for the telephone number and information about calling. I do not have all the answers. I don't. I really don't. But I have a lot of opinions. So I will share them with you if you ask. So today we're going to be answering some emails and we have a couple phone calls. So let's get started. The first one is from Marcy. Marcy wrote, "Hi, Colleen. My question isn't really a circumstantial question, what would you do type of question, but hopefully it's an easy one. You talk a lot about tea in your podcast. I'm interested to know what types and brands you recommend. Are there certain ones that have the most health benefits? Also, I've heard it could be good for menstrual cramps. Is there a specific kind for that? Thank you, Marcy." Well, thank you for asking, Marcy. I do talk a lot about tea, don't I? I probably don't realize how much I do, but I do. In fact, I'm going to take a sip of tea right now. I just did it. I just took a sip of tea. I just took a sip of tea. I just took a sip of Cloud Mist, which is my favorite green, one of my favorite greens. So you'd think like I liked tea or something. And I am a tea snob. I admit it. I'm a tea snob. I grew up on Lipton, black tea, bagged tea with lots of sugar. That's how I grew up. And that's what I would drink. I would drink Tetley's or Lipton or even Twinings. And when I discovered good tea, loose tea, proper tea, when I was about 20, probably is when I got hooked on proper tea. Real tea. And I say that because Lipton and Tetley's and these guys, these are cheaper brands because they're tea blends and most of them are black and they're not very good tea. They're just not. So I got really interested in them and I got really interested in the different types. And that's what happens. Once you start trying something new, your tastes change and you just don't want the cheap stuff anymore. It happens with whatever it is, coffee, wine, what have you. So that happened with me with tea. And you probably know this already, but there are different kinds of tea depending on how the leaves are processed, if you will, but they all come from the same plant, the Camellia sinensis. So there's white, green, oolong, or black, and they all come from the Camellia sinensis. And this is why I get really picky when people call herbal tea, because it's not technically tea. Tea refers specifically to the plant, the Camellia sinensis, but that's just me being picky and I can't help it. So the differences between white, green, oolong, and black are how they're grown and how they're harvested and how they're quote unquote processed. I drink a lot of Chinese teas. I drink a lot of Japanese teas. And my favorite oolong teas are Taiwanese teas. And the white tea I drink tends to be Chinese as well. But the green teas tend to be like Japanese and Chinese. And like I said, there's white, which are the most pure. These are just young leaves, like new buds that have undergone no oxidation. And so they're really just light and really, really lovely, very flowery. A lot of the white tea tends to be. The green teas, basically there is an oxidation process, but it's stopped after a very short period of time. And the oxidation can be done either with heat. Basically, the oxidation is done with heat, either with steam, which is a traditional Japanese method, or like in hot pans, which is a traditional Chinese method. And then you have oolong, which is the next step in oxidation. So it's stopped a little longer between, it's kind of between green and black is the way to think of oolong teas. And then in black teas, they're completely oxidized. So that's kind of the whole spectrum. And I kind of drink the different teas at different times of the day. I buy them from two different sources, pretty much. Farleaves and Teance are both teas, tea places in the San Francisco Bay Area, but you could probably find places near you. But these places are great, and they also ship anywhere. I mean, at least anywhere in the country. I know. I don't know if they ship internationally. They might. So farleaves.com and Teance.com, both are in Berkeley, and they deliver anywhere. So those are the two that I get. Teance is a little more specialized, and they're just incredible. The teas are absolutely incredible. So I tend to not use those for every day because I drink a lot of tea, and I would go broke if I just drank Teance tea, to be honest. But Farleaves is also good, and it's a little more middle of the road in terms of price. But it's worth it because the teas are just really fantastic. And the people who run these both these companies are great. So as far as the ones that I get, I drink green tea in the morning. It's my preferred morning tea. Some people like black tea in the morning. I like green tea in the morning. My favorites are Dragon Well. Lushan Clouds and Mist is what it's called at Teance, but Cloud Mist is what it's called at Farleaf. So Cloud Mist. And it literally means that these plants, the Camellia sinensis, these particular plants, are grown in a cloudy, misty area of the mountain. So it has a very particular flavor because of that. So it's really, it depends on where the plants are grown. That's what also determines the flavor, not just how they oxidize it. So Cloud Mist is one of my favorites. It's really buttery. Bi Luo Shun is another Chinese that I like. That's B-I and then L-U-O-C-H-U-N. Purple Bamboo is another one. Those are all Chinese. The Japanese greens, I love Sencha. I love Gyokuro, which is also not cheap, but it's fantastic. And then matcha. Not everybody likes matcha. Matcha tea is the dried and powdered Gyokuro leaves. Gyokuro is a G-Y-O-K-U-R-O, Gyokuro. And the matcha is the dried powder Gyokuro leaves, and it's basically whipped into a thick brew. It's very thick and sometimes bitter, and so if you don't like that, you won't like this, but it is an acquired taste. It's what people say about coffee, which is why I'm like, I don't want to acquire the taste for it. Why would I have to acquire the taste for it? But it would be the case with matcha. It is an acquired taste. It's an excellent morning tea, and it is a really energizing beverage. A lot of people will drink it before they exercise. And it's the traditional tea used in the traditional Japanese tea ceremony. And if you've never experienced a Japanese tea ceremony before, which you can experience if you go to Japan, if you look for a Zen Buddhist center near you, a lot of them do have tea ceremonies, especially at different holidays throughout the year, like a New Year Japanese tea ceremony. I recommend it because it's pretty incredible, and we do them a couple times a year. And then after lunch, I tend to drink green, but then as it gets to later afternoon in the evening, I tend to enjoy oolong. And my favorite oolongs are Taiwanese oolongs, and my favorite and David's favorite is Dungding, which is spelled T-U-N-G-T-I-N-G, Dungding. It might be also D-O-N-G-D-I-N-G, Dungding. And that's also carried by Teance and Farleaves, and I'm sure many other fine tea places. And then the white teas, like I said, are very special, a little flowery. And there's white peony, silver needle, white down, so much lighter, much more flowery and lovely. As for helping with menstrual cramps, I've heard that too, and there are many studies confirming the health benefits from drinking tea, and I'm sure you can find thousands of these studies and articles by taking a short trip around the interwebs. I know that's the case. There are so many different benefits, and you can really find more information about that. But I find it helps in many ways, but I don't drink it because of a particular health issue. I just love drinking it, and I love the way it feels. And the only time I decrease my tea intake, you might remember this when I talked about iron in the iron episode, is when I'm about to give blood. Caffeine affects iron levels in your blood. It affects the hemoglobin. And there's nothing more disappointing than going to the blood center and getting your hemoglobin tested only to be too low because you drank some tea that morning. And so I don't drink tea before I go give blood, which is really annoying because like drinking tea is part of my morning ritual. So I make my blood center appointments as early as possible so I can just go there, give them a blood, and come back and drink some tea. And that doesn't mean that tea is bad. It just means that if you need to have higher iron levels at a particular moment, or you don't want to deplete them at that moment, then you don't want to drink caffeine while you're eating iron-rich foods. And like I said, if I want to give blood, I don't want to have to turn around because I have to come back the next day to see if my iron levels are higher. So that's it. So that's my story about the tea. Teance, Farleaves, fantastic teas. Try different ones if you've never tried them before. there's just a whole world of teas out there. As you probably know, I've never had a cup of coffee in my life, and I'm glad for that. Yeah, drink tea. Thank you for asking. I am happy to pass along my affection for tea and for these companies. And by the way, we are going to be welcoming sponsorships again from our compassionate business partners. And Teon sponsored a long time ago, and I am certain they will sponsor again. But don't hesitate to tell them that you heard about them through me, because I wouldn't be surprised if they gave you a discount. We're going to be getting some great discounts from them, hopefully. But in the meantime, if you want to order something from Farleaves or Teon's, you know, don't be too shy to say, to even write an email and say, hey, I'd love to order from you. I heard about you from Colleen Patrick Goudreau. And are you offering a discount at this time because of that referral? Betcha they would give it to you. So do that and let me know how it goes, okay? Second question from, oh, this is a very short one. Second question from Anonymous. Don't our bodies make 80% of the cholesterol we need, but don't we have to ingest the other 20% from animal products? The short answer is no. That's it. I mean, I could end there. The answer is no. But the longer answer is no. That's 100% not true. We need some cholesterol in our bodies. Cholesterol is a fat-like substance in all of the cells of our body. And we, of course, need cholesterol, some cholesterol, to make hormones and vitamin D and certain substances that enable us to digest foods. But your body and my body and your body and your body and your body makes all the cholesterol it needs. We do not need to consume dietary cholesterol from other animals in order for our bodies to make cholesterol. So if you think about it, that doesn't make any sense, right? Because, or it makes sense that we wouldn't, because if you think about other animals, they also, if they have a liver, they have cholesterol. So let's think about a cow. They're eating plants and their bodies are making all the cholesterol they need, right? They're not consuming dietary cholesterol to make cholesterol in their bodies. So why would we? Why would we have to eat those animals to get their dietary cholesterol when they're not eating any dietary cholesterol for their bodies to make the cholesterol people think we need in eating animal products? Okay. Does that make sense? So no, the answer is we do not need to consume dietary cholesterol through animal products. Our bodies make all the cholesterol we need. Okay. So that's that short and sweet. Moving on. The next question is a phone call. The first call is from Brad in Germany.
Hi, Brad. What's up?
Hi. I have a question regarding vegan protein nutrition and protein powders. I've experimented with a lot of protein powders. And as you very well know, and I know from your podcast, you can get amino, I'm sorry, English is sometimes hard.
That's okay.
You can... The body can recombine the amino acids even if you eat them over the course of the day. So my question is, you're experimenting with pea and brown rice, but I've done so much research, but I can't find the optimal amounts. And I was wondering if you have any tips there, because I use it after my workout to try and get a protein jolt. I know you say that you don't need protein, but there's a lot of people that are interested in fitness and bodybuilding and don't want to miss out on a protein powder.
Well, first of all, let's clarify. I have never said that you don't need protein. So I just want to make sure that's totally clear. So of course, I've said you don't need animal protein. And of course, I've also said that we don't have to obsess over protein, just as, you know, as far as normal folks just kind of, you know, living our lives. There are different protein requirements depending on if you're in a specific group, right? So there's a higher protein requirement if you're pregnant, if you're lactating, which sounds like you're probably not doing. And there's a different protein requirement if you're an athlete or if you're bodybuilding, etc. So it's the same protein requirement whether you're vegan or not vegan for all of those groups. The question is, where are you getting the protein from? So is that what you're asking? Is how much are you asking, how much do you need as a bodybuilder, athlete, etc.? Or are you asking how much protein is in these other brown rice, pea?
I was actually wondering, unless you have another tip, what I would consider a healthy, well-rounded, you know, high protein diet. I eat a lot of tempeh, fermented proteins, natto, beans, but also, you know, whole grains, things like that. But I do supplement right after strength-based muscle building exercise. I do want an alternative essentially to whey protein. I don't, it's a non-vegan protein that comes from milk. And that's what everybody uses basically. And obviously being a vegan for ethical reasons, that's not an option for me.
Right.
So I don't want to forego that protein punch. And I'm wondering if you know of a silver bullet, so to speak, to give you that edge where your body is just needing those amino acids to get them going. I've tried hemp, I've tried brown rice, I've tried pea protein, and these are powdered forms. So I know, you know, it's not eating food, which is probably the best way to get your nutrients. I'm just looking for that edge for bodybuilding. Like, maybe it's a specific question for athletes, but a lot of people like to add protein powder to their smoothies. So maybe you have a tip.
So when you say the pea protein, I'm assuming that you're talking about the Vega line?
Actually, I use myprotein.de, which is a German website.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, fine.
I'm calling from Germany.
Oh, fantastic. So yeah, so you have access to a protein supplement in powdered form that's pea-based.
Right.
And why aren't you feeling satisfied with that?
I just noticed it doesn't do what whey used to do for me. And I think the reason is because the amino acid profile is just a little bit off. It's just not what it's low in some and high in others. It just doesn't have that optimal profile. And that's my question. Because I mean, sorry,
no,
I don't mean
you're great. You're fine. You're fine. I'm taking deep breaths and I'm listening to you. And I want to just make sure your question gets answered.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. It's okay. So I don't know that I'm going to be the right one, because I do think there are people who are much more, you know, focused on athletics than I am. I mean, I would definitely look at, you've probably looked at Brendan Brazier's information and
yeah,
his website.
I bought his two books, which are great for a vegan athlete.
Okay. I can't imagine being that in tune with my body to know the difference right after a workout. And I'm not any kind of competitive athlete, but I run and I do strength training and that kind of thing. I still can't imagine being so in tune that I would notice the slight difference between the amino acid profile in a whey-based versus a pea-based. I just can't imagine that. I just can't. So, you know, maybe look at it this way, Brad, and maybe this will help, maybe this won't help. Maybe you don't compare how you're feeling with the pea protein and the brown rice, and, you know, maybe find a great combination that feels really good for you. But maybe instead of comparing that to how you used to feel with the whey-based protein powder, maybe you just assess it on its own.
Right. There are benefits. There are a lot of benefits. You don't have sorry to say this, but you don't get the gas that you do with whey.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, since I went vegan, I totally have no more problems with belly fat at all. It's so easy. You don't have to cut when you're vegan. So there are benefits. You're right.
So
just
maybe
take it for what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Because what happens is we look at it as being, we don't just look at it as being different. We look at it as being inferior. And then if that's the barometer, then we're always chasing after that and everything else pales.
I never thought of it that way. And I guess I should. Thank you so much. You've really elucidated yet another aspect of being vegan.
Oh.
Just kind of test it on its own and not worry about meeting up to some kind of animal standard. Sorry about that. I guess that was a silly thing.
No, I love it. I'm so glad you asked that. And I'm glad, because I'm thinking, God, I'm not going to be able to help you. And I'm not even going to air this because it's not going to help you. But I think that is really key, because I talk about that when it comes to taste. And I think it applies here too. If you feel great and you're feeling like you're really getting a lot out of your workouts and you're feeling charged and you're feeling optimal and you're really thriving, then go with that and look in a different direction than comparing it to the way you used to feel.
All right. Thank you very much, Colleen. Your life there. Thank you for all your work, too.
Thank you, Brad. Thanks. Have a good night.
Have a good night. Bye.
All right. Bye.
So thanks, Brad. That was so awesome. I was really so happy that ultimately I was helpful to Brad. I think I was. And it was really awesome to hear him have a light bulb moment, because I wasn't sure I was going to be able to help him there, because he had such a specific question about a specific issue, a specific product. And I'm really glad that was helpful. So stay in touch. I want to hear how it goes. And it was a pleasure to talk to you. We have another call from Tracy. Tracy in Sacramento.
Hi, Tracy. Thanks so much for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So, where are you calling from?
I'm in Sacramento.
Oh, yes, I'm Tracy. I know this name, Tracy. I know this name.
Yeah. She's a friend.
Of course, of course. Hi.
And yes, I know that you were up here not too long ago, and I missed you because I'm part of the vegan society up here, and you were up here a couple months ago, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to hear you speak.
Well, I will be back. I will be back. And actually, I'm going to be at the Animal Place Thanksgiving
Oh,
event.
yes.
Will
I
you be
signed up for
there?
that.
Oh, good,
Yes.
good, good. Well, then I'll see you there.
Yeah. Great.
Yay.
Awesome. So, I just love how eloquent you are and everything you say are just things I would never even think of for some reason. And so, because you just it's just amazing. You're so gifted.
Thank you.
And you never seem to say the wrong thing to somebody, and you seem to have an impact on people. And honestly, a lot of times I'm just at a loss for words as to what to say to people. And one thing I'm noticing too is that people will say, "Oh, I know what happens. I've seen the videos, or I know what happens." And but I just it would again, they're going back to, "Oh, it's just a monumental task to change," or "I would have to do so many things that it, whatever." And that's, so that's the excuse they come up with when you try to, give them, "Well, did you know about, do you know about the dairy cows or the eggs?" Or, "Well, oh, yes, I know about that. I've heard about that. I've seen the videos." And even after all of that, supposedly what they know or they've been told, they still continue, because they don't want to make a change, or, they make excuses, basically.
So tell me, so then what is the question? Is it how do I deal with them saying, not wanting to do anything, or how do I respond to a specific question? Because that's the really important question, and I'm not asking that to press you to get to your question here. I'm literally suggesting, what is it that you want? What is it that you want from what you're not getting right now, in these interactions?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Right?
It's yeah, because it's like, okay, so then whatever I had prepared in my mind as to what, I always have these things kind of prepared out in my mind as to what I'm going to say, and then, I don't know where to go with people like that. What direction do I lead them to? Or, how do we get this conversation started again? If, because again, I'm using all the things that I have in my little toolbox
Right. So you
that
throw
I've
as much out as
learned.
you can and like let's see what sticks. And that doesn't necessarily work because then what
No, it
happens is you're
doesn't.
right and they're feeling it and it's not authentic and you're not connecting and you're not really having a dialogue. I mean, that's I think the thing that really makes or breaks these interactions we have with people is we need to connect with them first. And this is not implying in any way that you're not connecting, but I think that when I encounter someone, anyone, whatever the situation, because as you've heard me say, I bring this up all the time. I bring it up on purpose because I know that it's just going to open a door and they're going to walk through it. It's great. It's kind of easy and it's exciting and I love it. And there, it happens every time. It's rare that it doesn't happen. But when I have these encounters, I really am looking to connect. I want to connect with these people because I want to get to the heart of what their block is, whatever it is. And it comes out pretty quickly, and it comes out pretty quickly when there's a real authentic interaction between you and that person. So you've probably heard me say this before, and I don't want to sound like a broken record about knowing what our intention is when we're communicating with people. And if our intention is to engage and connect and raise awareness and speak the truth and plant seeds, that's a very different connection, interaction, than I just want them to get it. I just want them to hear me. I just want them to change. I just want them to know. And that when that's the desire, people don't respond to that because they know that, that you have an agenda. And there's nothing wrong with having an agenda. I'm proud of my vegan agenda. But if it's proposed in that way, imposed that way, and, you know, that's how it's presented, people recoil. They just do. Yeah. So I would suggest that when, you know, you're encountering these things and you can practice, I mean, that's what's so beautiful about this is you can practice with people one-on-one, you with someone in the grocery store, with the person, you know, you meet on the street or whatever. You can practice this in what's my intention? What do I want to get out of this? That's why I asked you that early on. What do you want to get out of this? And for me, what works is I want to get a connection out and I want to speak the truth and I want to plant seeds. That's it. And what I said this to, you've heard me say this before, you can't but succeed when that's your intention. Because you did what you set out to do. But if your intention is to make someone change or make them see it or make them understand or make them really, you can't control them. So it's not going to work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I get it. I get it. I got to totally change. Yeah, because we're all so passionate. I think I speak for myself and I speak for other vegans. We're so passionate. We're like, oh my gosh, didn't you know? You know, don't you know what happens? And, you know, so
absolutely.
We go to that.
But let me say this.
Like, don't we want the world to know.
Of course. But you just said it and it's beautiful because you don't lose that enthusiasm. Don't lose that passion. You can still have it. But want the world to know is different than want the world to change, want the world to get it, whatever, right? But want the world to know? Okay, so what does that look like? That means, I have information that I didn't have once before, and now I have it, and I will share it, and I can share it, but that ends there. That ends with sharing it, and then the rest is not yours. And I do think it works really well if we all speak from the personal pronoun rather than using you and I. So you said that, you know, you're throwing stuff out and will this stick? And I said that, so I'm putting words in your mouth, but you know, you said that, that you have so much in your toolbox and it's not working. I would recommend trying to just hear what they're saying. If there is a specific excuse they're saying, see if you can identify with it. See if you can pull something out of your experience that says, you know, I had that same issue and I never thought I'd be able to get over it. But you know what? I did X and I found that I was able to. So really try and have a dialogue, try to have a connection with them rather than just trying to pull out everything from your toolbox and see if it works. Try that. Let me know what happens because I'm watching you and I know where you are and I want to hear how you do with it.
I'm going to see you on Saturday.
And I'm going to see you. So I want to know. I really want to hear how it goes. So just try that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's great. Okay. Awesome.
You can do
Yay.
It. Thanks so much, Tracy. Speak from your heart. It's
you.
A huge heart and people will respond to that. I promise you. So good luck and keep me posted.
All right. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks Tracy. Bye bye.
Bye.
Thanks again, Tracy. It was great talking to you as well. We have one final email for our What Would Colleen Do segment, and this email is from Anonymous. She wrote, or he wrote, you don't know because it's anonymous, I am vegan and an organizer for a vegan meetup group in my city and having a bit of trouble with one certain aspect of running the meetup group. Eating out at non-vegan restaurants. While my city is fortunate to have a few local vegan restaurants, for monotony's sake, I'd like to expand our group's dining horizons and venture out a bit, especially since many of our members enjoy eating at different places in the company of like-minded folks. Many non-vegan restaurants in my area serve food that can easily be altered to be vegan. Also, I especially like the idea of dining at non-vegan restaurants because I can plan ahead, make our vegan presence known, and ask questions to find out whether the restaurants are willing to cater to us. And I've gotten nothing but positive responses from restaurants. I feel doing this shows a demand for plant-based food options, which is a positive step in the right direction. Not to mention, it shows many of our new vegans or non-vegan members who are making the journey to veganism how to eat out compassionately wherever they may find themselves dining. So my problem is not with the non-vegan restaurants, but with some of my meetup's members. The majority seem to be accustomed to eating out at non-vegan spots and have no problem with it. But there's a handful who take on the role of vegan police and make their disapproval known about our restaurant choices. And it's not like our choices include places like steakhouses. They don't. They're usually restaurants that already have vegetarian or vegetarian-friendly food that's easy to work with and veganize, quote unquote. The vegan police's problem has mostly been with cross-contamination and the support of non-vegan restaurants. Now, I can totally appreciate the ick factor, and I do try my best to avoid it when and where I can, especially by communicating with restaurant staff ahead of time. However, for myself and many of the other meetup's members, we choose not to dwell on it since we aren't physically in the kitchen and can't really know if our food is cooked separately or not, and we do what we can to avoid it. But for many of us, the possibility of cross-contamination isn't enough to scare us from eating out, and we don't foresee it as a moral dilemma. Nor do we feel as if we are less vegan because of it, which some have accused us of. Some to the point of leaving the meetup group because we didn't share the same personal vegan boundaries. So my question to you is, how would you handle this? Should I give up on scheduling meetups that aren't at vegan restaurants, or should I risk pissing off the vegan police and continue to occasionally add non-vegan places to our lineup of events? What's an appropriate response to the negativity, or am I completely in the wrong and not appropriately understanding their concern? Thank you, Anonymous. I love this question, Anonymous, and I love how you articulated it. I found you incredibly clear and articulate, and I think you've answered a lot of your questions already, but I will respond. And one thing I will say is, as you know, this is not about being perfect, and I think they've completely lost the plot. That's just my opinion. The other thing is this idea, and I've talked about this in, I think, maybe an episode called The Myth of the Perfect Vegan, maybe. When I talk about restaurants specifically, there are vegan restaurants all over. And there are vegan restaurants in the San Francisco Bay Area that I frequent, and I know the owners are not vegan. So this idea that there's some purity, I don't mean the ick factor about, like, is there cross-contamination? I'm talking about there were two issues with the vegan police, quote-unquote, that Anonymous called them. There were two issues. One was the cross-contamination, and one was not supporting vegan restaurants. I'll tell you right now that a lot of people who own vegan restaurants are not vegan. So it's impossible and unrealistic to think that we can just completely support 100% vegan everything and it's a perfect world. It's not. So that is my first response to that. And you can return to that podcast episode to hear more about that. Millennium Restaurant, there are investors in Millennium Restaurant. I think maybe, I don't know the percentage, but whatever the percentage is of the vegan owners, that's like a small percentage of the total number of investors in that restaurant. And that's the best vegan restaurant, frankly, I think, in the country, Millennium. And I'm not supporting 100% vegan. The restaurant is vegan, but the people who make the money off of it are not. So that's one thing. The other thing is, cutting to the chase, your questions are, how would you handle this? Should I give up on scheduling meetups that aren't at vegan restaurants, or should I risk pissing off the vegan police and continue to occasionally add non-vegan places to our lineup of events? What's an appropriate response to the negativity, or am I completely wrong and not appropriately understanding their concern? So let me start by saying, you cannot please everyone. You never will be able to please everyone ever in anything you do in life. You cannot please everyone. All you can do is what you think is best. And know that no matter what you do, even if you do your best, someone will be unhappy, right? So I went back to the beginning of your email, which said, I am an organizer for a vegan meetup group in my city, and I'm having a bit of trouble with one certain aspect of running the meetup group. You're the organizer, Anonymous, and you're running it. And it sounds like you're doing a darn good job being mindful and accommodating and compassionate. I mean, just writing to me, asking me what I would do, indicates that you're a sensitive person who doesn't want to upset anyone. But if you remember my response to Charlie in a previous episode about his concerns about the alumni group he leads, and I told him that this was an opportunity to learn the difference between being a leader and being a dictator, this is what this reminds me of. So effective leaders make reasonable decisions that are sensitive to everyone, but in the end, they know they can't please everyone and they ultimately have to make a decision. It's not always easy to do because it means someone might be mad at you or critical of you or even leave, but that's their stuff. And you know what? If they can do it better, they're free to create their own meetup group. You don't have to cater to every single person and every whim and every criticism. activism, right? If you're willing to put yourself out there and do something meaningful or different or public, then this comes with the territory. What's the alternative? Not do anything at all, or try and bend over backwards such that you've now lost your own interest and passion and intention and joy about why you did this in the first place, right? I mean, I deal with this when I look at reviews of my books on Amazon, which I really don't even do anymore. But there are people who criticize me for writing a baking book that uses sugar and white flour. Well, you know what? Those are the choices I made, and I stand by those choices. I was making a baking book. I wasn't writing a book on broccoli. I was writing a baking book, and that's how I bake. And I wanted to demystify vegan baking for people who do want those treats when they're appropriate to eat. And I stand by that choice. And if those folks who criticize me want to go out and write a baking book that doesn't use sugar and flour, then they're welcome to do it. But can you imagine if I didn't write that book because I felt I had to please everyone? There will be people who are going to criticize my work. I mean, David and I look at the classics that have endured over hundreds of years. And you know what? They get criticism. So I can't please everybody, right? If I tried to please every single person who might pick up that book and not like what I did, then I would never have written it. And that's my point. It's impossible to please everybody. You have to just stand by what you decide to do while being true to yourself. Be sensitive and mindful, but in the end, you have to just do what you think is the best thing to do. So back to your specific questions, should I give up on scheduling meetups that aren't at vegan restaurants, or should I risk pissing off the vegan police and continue to occasionally add non-vegan places to our lineup of events? Well, those are two questions. To answer the first, if you feel that you're bringing value to the folks who come to the meetup by scheduling dinners at non-vegan restaurants, and you already indicated that you do feel you're creating value and community, you're developing relationships with vegan-friendly non-vegan restaurants, you're demonstrating demand for vegan options at non-vegan restaurants, you're planning ahead, you're making your vegan presence known, and you're showing many of your new vegans or non-vegan members who are making the journey to veganism how to eat out compassionately, you know, doing the best they can wherever they may find themselves dining, these are all your own words, then I think you already know the answer to that question. You indicated that you are bringing value to the meetup that you organized, right? The second part of that question was, or should I risk pissing off the vegan police and continue to occasionally add non-vegan places to our lineup of events? Again, I think you already know the answer. I think you already know my answer, but just to drive the point home, this is an elective event. They don't have to come. If they don't like a place you've chosen, they don't have to come. And they can come to the next dinner that's at a vegan-only restaurant. This doesn't have to be this black and white. Are they going to leave? Am I doing something wrong? Should I stop doing the meetup? Should I stop scheduling at non-vegan restaurants? They can opt out of the particular event at that non-vegan restaurant. It's not like this dramatic decision, people. I mean, don't go. Like, don't go to the dinner, or have a sub meetup for those people who don't want to go to the non-vegan restaurant, and they can go to the vegan restaurant, right? So the final question is, what's an appropriate response to the negativity? You know what an appropriate response is? Thank you so much for your input. We appreciate and consider everyone's perspective, and we're doing our best. We hope you will join us. And if not, we hope you'll join us next time at the vegan restaurant. That's it. So that's my 2 cents. I hope that helps. Clearly, I'm very passionate about this because I'm really sensitive to people doing work in this world and being, you know, made to feel that they're doing something wrong because they're not doing it perfectly. So I really thank you for doing what you're doing and creating community and encouraging non-vegan restaurants to get vegan items on the menu. The more we can do that, the more we can work toward a vegan world, literally, because the more non-vegan restaurants and non-vegan vendors realize that there's a marketplace, right? This is about money. This is about profit for a restaurant. When they realize there's a marketplace and an audience for vegan items on their menu, they will do more of it. So I commend you for what you're doing, and I want to hear what happens. So get back to me if you can, and if not, just good luck and keep up the great work. So that's it, folks. Just as a reminder, listener sponsorship is essential to keeping this podcast going. So head over to ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com to show your support by making a donation. Today's tweetable, we had One Life Matters, especially to the one whose life it is, and effective leaders do their best to make reasonable, mindful decisions, but they know they can't please everyone. So just keep that in mind as well. That's all I got for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thanks for listening.